The Book of Daniel. Number 124, Unveiling Daniel 11:40, a prophetic examination of historical parallels and future events. Key takeaways. In this comprehensive analysis, we delve into the intricate layers of Daniel chapter 11, focusing particularly on verse 40 and its profound implications. Drawing parallels between historical events and future prophetic scenarios, we decipher the intricate symbolism and explore the alignment between past fulfillments and impending manifestations. Through a meticulous examination of the text, we uncover the dual parallel timelines embedded within verse 40, shedding light on pivotal moments in religious history and geopolitical transitions. From the unsealing of divine knowledge to the rise and fall of world powers, every detail is meticulously dissected to reveal the profound truths encoded within Daniel's prophecy. Verse 40 as a prophetic nexus. Establishing verse 40 as a pivotal point in Daniel's prophecy, bridging historical events with future developments. Drawing parallels between verse 40 and verse 14 of Daniel chapter 8, illuminating the interconnectedness of prophetic revelations. Dual timelines and symbolic significance. Unraveling the multifaceted symbolism within verse 40, representing divergent historical trajectories and spiritual dynamics. Examining the dichotomy between the restoration and destruction of the temple and its correlation with divine and human interventions. Sequential unfolding of events, analyzing the sequential progression of events from verses 40 to 45, unveiling the intricate tapestry of prophetic fulfillments. Highlighting the role of Rome in biblical prophecy and its interaction with God's people throughout history. Historical parallels and modern applications. Tracing the lineage of Rome's influence from pagan antiquity to contemporary geopolitics, with a focus on the United States' prophetic significance. Interpreting the actions of historical figures like Clovis and Ronald Reagan as symbolic representations of larger spiritual conflicts and political alliances. Prophecy and current events. Exploring the relevance of Daniel's prophecy in the context of contemporary global affairs, particularly in relation to religious freedoms and geopolitical shifts. Drawing parallels between past persecutions and potential future challenges faced by God's faithful followers. Spiritual awakening and prophetic fulfillment. Anticipating a revival of primitive godliness preceding the final judgment, as prophesied by Daniel and affirmed by spiritual insights. Warning against deceptive influences and counterfeit movements seeking to obstruct genuine spiritual revival in the last days. Through a meticulous analysis of Daniel chapter 11, particularly verse 40, this study unveils profound insights into historical parallels and future events. By deciphering the intricate symbolism and exploring the interconnectedness of prophetic revelations, we gain a deeper understanding of God's unfolding plan for humanity amidst geopolitical upheavals and spiritual awakenings. As we navigate through the complexities of biblical prophecy and contemporary realities, may we remain vigilant and steadfast in faith, discerning the signs of the times, and preparing for the imminent fulfillment of God's purposes. We are taking time to set forth the structure of Daniel chapter 11 as we address verse 40. Verse 40 is the parallel of verse 14 of Daniel chapter 8 in the prophetic sense that the light, which Christ as the Lion of the tribe of Judah unsealed in 1798 was based upon Daniel chapter 8 verse 14, so too the light which he unsealed in 1989 was based upon verse 40. As we have pointed out, but not actually addressed in a previous article, when employing the latter rain methodology of line upon line, verse 40 sets forth two distinct lines, for it contains the time of the end for both the movement of the first angel and the movement of the third angel. When we bring together verse 40's time of the end in 1798, and its time of the end in 1989, we find that Daniel chapter 8, verse 14, aligns with Daniel chapter 11, verse 40, for they both represent the knowledge that is unsealed in the prophetic history of the three angels of Revelation 14. They are also connected by the fact that verse 14 is the Mara vision of Christ's sudden appearance to the temple, and verse 40 is the Chazon vision of the 2520 years of prophetic history. One is a point in time, the other is a period of time. One represents the restoration and cleansing of the temple, the other the destruction and trampling down of the temple. One represents the 2300 years, and the other the 2520 years. One is represented by the river Ulai, the other by the river Hiddekel. One represents humanity, the other represents divinity. Rightly understood, verse 40 in connection with verse 14 is amazingly profound. 1798 represents the work of divinity, and 1989 represents the rebellion of humanity. We identified in the previous article that the description of the conquering of three obstacles by the King of the North is represented in a sequential fashion, but that the actual application of the events portrayed need to be carefully applied, for verses 42 through and including verse 44 are actually aligned with verse 41, which is the soon-coming Sunday law in the United States. It is there that the threefold union is accomplished, and there where the loud cry message of the East and North begins. In Daniel 11, it has been recognized by Adventist students through the years that Daniel employs a specific technique in his illustrations of Rome. Uriah Smith takes note of it in the book Daniel and Revelation. Daniel first identifies how Rome takes control of the world, and then, in the following verses, he drops back to the beginning of the history, identifying the political conquering, and identifies how Rome interacts with God's people during that very same history. Then ultimately he identifies how Rome comes to its end. The principle Daniel employs is called repeat and enlarge. This three-step technique is identified in verses 40 to 45. Verses 40 to 43 identify the three-step process of modern Rome capturing planet Earth. Then in verse 44, Daniel drops back to verse 41, when the tidings that are then proclaimed by the ensign of the 144,000, and when the papacy then goes forth with great fury to destroy and utterly make away many. Then in verses 45 and chapter 12, verse 1, the papacy comes to his end with none to help, between the seas and the glorious holy mountain, as human probation closes. In verse 30 of Daniel 11, we find the beginning of a history that Sister White quotes word for word through to verse 36 and then writes, "Scenes similar to those described in these verses will take place." Verse 30 and 31 identify the historical transition from pagan Rome to papal Rome as the fourth and fifth kingdoms of Bible prophecy, respectively. Verse 31 describes the history, which represents how papal Rome was placed upon the throne of the earth in the year 538. In verse 31, the first thing identified is when Clovis, king of the Franks, modern France, stood up for the papacy in the year 496. Clovis then converted from outright paganism to the hidden paganism of Catholicism, the religion of his wife Clotilda. He then dedicated his throne to lifting up the papacy to the throne of the earth. Clovis was represented by the arms, in the verse, for he dedicated his arm of military might and his arm of monetary might to the work he then undertook. Clovis's initial work represented the work of all the kings of formerly pagan Europe, who were destined to provide various supports for the whore of Rome as the history unfolded. Clovis, and thereafter France, was anointed by the Catholic Church with the title of the firstborn of the Catholic Church, and also the eldest daughter of the Catholic Church. He was the symbol of the first of many kings to commit fornication with the whore of Tyre. In this prophetic sense, Clovis had been represented by Ahab, who also had committed fornication with Jezebel, symbol of the Catholic Church in the book of Revelation, and who was also the premier king of 10 tribes, as Clovis became the premier symbol of the 10 horns. See Daniel chapter 7 of pagan Rome. Those kings of Europe would ultimately establish the whore of Babylon on the throne of the earth. In this sense, Ahab and Clovis both represent the United States, who is the first of 10 kings of Revelation chapter 17, to commit fornication with the papacy in the last days. Ronald Reagan began the fornication, and it will be the last president that forces the other 9 kings of the United Nations to also commit the same act. Reagan was president at the time of the end in 1989, and he therefore must prophetically represent the last president in the history where the other 9 kings accomplish the same act. For Jesus always illustrates the end of a thing with the beginning of a thing. Reagan was a wealthy, well-known media personality, highly recognized for his own peculiar style of speaking, who initially was in the Democratic Party, who eventually switched to the Republican Party. In verse 31, the arms that stood for the papacy would pollute the sanctuary of strength. Prophetically, the sanctuary of strength for both pagan Rome and papal Rome was the city of Rome. This is based upon the fact that both Romes ruled for a specific period of time from the city of Rome, and when they ruled from the city of Rome, they were essentially invincible. Pagan Rome began its 360-year rule at the Battle of Actium in the year 31 BC. Daniel chapter 11, verse 24, identifies that they would forecast their devices from their stronghold, which was the city of Rome, for a time. A prophetic time is 360 years, and 360 years after the Battle of Actium, where Antony and Cleopatra were defeated, Constantine moved out of the city of Rome to the city of Constantinople, and the period of pagan Rome's invincibility was over. When the third geographical obstacle for papal Rome, the Goths, were driven out of the city of Rome in the year 538, papal Rome's 1,260-year rule of supremacy began and continued until 1798, when the Pope was removed from the city of Rome, thus delivering the prophetic deadly wound to the papal beast. And in the next year, 1799, that Pope, the woman who had ridden the beast, died in captivity. The arms, Clovis, which stood for the papacy, were to pollute the sanctuary of strength, and Constantine began that work by philosophically identifying the city as a lesser city than Constantinople. And from that point on, the warfare of that history that was carried out by the enemies of Rome was always focused upon attacking the city of Rome. And by the year 476, there was never again an actual Roman descendant that ruled in the city. Until the year 538, when the city became the sanctuary of strength for papal Rome. Ahab, Clovis, and France typify the United States, and the United States' sanctuary of strength is the Constitution of the United States. That document is a divine document, and it is a waymark of prophetic history. Since Ronald Reagan stood up for the papacy in the history leading up to 1989, the Constitution has been under a constant escalating attack, as was the sanctuary of strength in the demise and fall of pagan Rome. When the soon-coming Sunday law in the United States is enforced, the Constitution will be fully overthrown. From the time of Reagan until that Sunday law, the history from the year 330 to 538 is repeated. In the year 538, the papacy was placed upon the throne, thus typifying the healing of its deadly wound at that Sunday law. The period from Ronald Reagan to the Sunday law is a prophetic period that is specifically identified by God's prophetic word. The arms, represented by Clovis, were also to take away the daily from the formerly pagan kingdom of the Roman Empire. The religion of the empire had been pagan from the very outset, and Clovis began the work of replacing the religion of open paganism with the religion of Catholicism, which is simply cloaked paganism. The United States fully removes the religion of Protestantism when it enforces the mark of papal authority at the soon-coming Sunday law, for the only definition of the word Protestant is to protest Rome. If you accept the mark of Rome's authority, you are not protesting Rome. In Amos chapter 3, verse 3, Amos asks the rhetorical question, "Can two walk together except they be agreed?" In the movements now in progress in the United States to secure for the institutions and usages of the church the support of the state, Protestants are following in the steps of papists. Nay more, they are opening the door for the papacy to regain in Protestant America the supremacy which she has lost in the Old World. The Great Controversy, 573. When the religion of paganism was taken away as the official religion of the realm in the year 508, it typified that the restraint, represented by Paul in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, had been taken away in advance of the revealing of the man of sin at the soon-coming Sunday law in the United States. The subjection of the openly pagan religion, transitioning to the hidden pagan religion of Catholicism, did not happen instantly, and it is marked in history as beginning with Clovis's conversion to Catholicism in the year 496, and fully accomplished by the year 508. Thus, from the Reagan years, beginning in 1989, until the soon-coming Sunday law, genuine Protestantism will be fully restrained in the United States. At that time, the Constitution, the sanctuary of strength for the United States will be overturned, and the fourth work of the arms of verse 31 will be accomplished, as the arms then place the papacy upon the throne of the earth, as was the case in the year 538. Once the papacy took the throne in the year 538, the narrative in Daniel switches from describing how the papacy captured the world to the subject of how the papacy persecuted God's people in that history. In verse 14 of chapter 10 of Daniel, Gabriel had informed Daniel that the purpose of the vision he was about to present to Daniel was to demonstrate what would befall God's people in the latter days. Now I am come to make thee understand what shall befall thy people in the latter days, for yet the vision is for many days. Daniel 10:14. Verse 32 through to verse 36 are the verses that Sister White directly say will be repeated, and those verses describe the persecution of the 1260-year rule of the papacy from the time it was placed on the throne in the year 538 until it received its deadly wound in 1798. And such as do wickedly against the covenant shall he corrupt by flatteries, but the people that do know their God shall be strong and do exploits. And they that understand among the people shall instruct many, yet they shall fall by the sword and by flame, by captivity and by spoil many days. Now when they shall fall, they shall be holpen with a little help, but many shall cleave to them with flatteries. And some of them of understanding shall fall to try them and to purge and to make them white, even to the time of the end, because it is yet for a time appointed. And the king shall do according to his will, and he shall exalt himself and magnify himself of every god, and shall speak marvelous things against the God of gods, and shall prosper till the indignation be accomplished, for that is determined shall be done. Daniel 11:32-36. The verses describe the persecution of the Dark Ages, and verse 36 then identifies that the papacy would prosper until God's first indignation against the northern kingdom of Israel was accomplished in 1798. Daniel first identified how the papacy was placed upon the throne of the earth, then how the papacy interacted with God's people, and then the final fall of the papacy. Verse 40 through 43 of Daniel 11 identify how the papacy takes control of the world. Then verse 44 identifies how she persecutes God's latter-day people. And then verse 45 identifies how she comes to her final end with none to help. The Hebrew word truth was created by the wonderful linguist by bringing the first, 13th, and last letter of the Hebrew alphabet together to create the word truth. 13 is a symbol of rebellion, and the first represents the last. Verse 31 describes the end of pagan Rome as the fourth kingdom of Bible prophecy, and verse 36 identified the end of papal Rome as the fifth kingdom of Bible prophecy. Between the first description of the fall of Rome and the last description of the fall of Rome is the rebellion, represented by the papacy murdering millions of God's people in the history between the beginning and ending. The application of these verses bears the signature of truth. Verse 40 to 45, which is illustrated by verses 30 to 36, begins with the fall of the papacy, and it ends with the fall of the papacy. In the middle of the history beginning in 1798, through the close of probation, is the rebellion of modern Rome, once again murdering God's people. The application of these verses also bear the signature of truth, and they align with one another to provide two witnesses which establish the truth. And both lines are describing Rome, which is the symbol that will establish the vision. And in those times there shall many stand up against the king of the south. Also the robbers of thy people shall exalt themselves to establish the vision, but they shall fall. Daniel 11:14. The prophetic phenomenon that Daniel employs in chapter 11 is used more than in just verses 30 to 36, and then in 40 to 45. Verses 14 through 19 identify how pagan Rome took control of the world. Then verses 20 to 24 identify how pagan Rome dealt with God's people. And from verse 24 to verse 30, the fall of pagan Rome is set forth. Verse 14 is the beginning of pagan Rome, and verse 30 is the end of pagan Rome. In the history represented in the middle, pagan Rome is identified as crucifying Christ. Thus, the rebellion of the middle identifies these verses as truth. Alpha and Omega placed his signature all the way through chapter 11 of the book of Daniel. Verse 40 contains the history which begins in the Ronald Reagan years and which identifies the alliance made between the President of the United States and the man of sin. It marks a specific period that concludes with the papacy being placed upon the throne of the earth, as it had been in the year 538. It is not a coincidence that Clovis, king of the Franks, which is modern-day France, is the symbol of the United States. Clovis typified Reagan. Reagan was a symbol of Protestantism, as was Clovis a symbol of paganism. The battle in which Clovis, king of the Franks, converted to Catholicism was the Battle of Tolbiac, also known as the Battle of Zulpich or the Battle of Cologne. This battle took place in the year 496. Clovis was a pagan at the time, but during the battle, when it seemed that his forces were in danger of defeat, he prayed to the Christian God of his Catholic wife for help and made a vow that if he emerged victorious, he would convert to Christianity. Clovis did win the battle, and as a result, he and a significant portion of his Frankish warriors converted to Catholicism, marking a significant event in the Christianization of the Franks. Ronald Reagan, a professed Protestant, identified that his motivation for forming a secret alliance with the Pope of Rome was that he was convicted that the Soviet Union was the Antichrist of Bible prophecy. In Reagan's battle against the former Soviet Union, without recognizing his confusion about who the Antichrist is, he joined with the Antichrist. Those who become confused in their understanding of the word, who fail to see the meaning of Antichrist, will surely place themselves on the side of Antichrist. Kress Collection, 105. The United States is a twofold prophetic symbol, as represented by the two horns of the earth beast. France is also a twofold prophetic symbol, as represented by Sodom and Egypt in Revelation chapter 11. France is the firstborn child of the papacy, and Reagan, representing the United States, was the first of the 10 kings of Revelation chapter 17 in the last days to commit fornication with the whore of Tyre, who had been forgotten since 1798. She was forgotten at the time of the end in 1798, but begins to be remembered at the time of the end in 1989. Clovis, the leader of France, marked the beginning of a period of time which led to the papacy being placed upon the throne in 538, where the papacy then passed a Sunday law at the Council of Orleans. Reagan, leader of the United States, marked the beginning of a period of time which is leading to the papacy once again being placed upon the throne of the earth at the soon-coming Sunday law. France is the twofold power that placed the papacy in 538, and France, through Napoleon's General Berthier, took the papacy off the throne in 1798. The United States places the papacy on the throne in the last days, and as the premier king of the 10 kings, the United States will ultimately make her desolate and naked, and shall eat her flesh and burn her with fire. Verse 40 contains the history of verse 31, and identifies that the work of placing the papacy back upon the throne of the earth is represented by the period of time beginning with Ronald Reagan and ending with the final president of the United States. That final president will have been typified by Reagan, for Jesus always illustrates the end with the beginning. In the first verses in Daniel 11, that prophetic history is set forth, verse 2. We find the history that preceded the history of the Kingdom of Greece. Greece is a symbol of the United Nations and the one-world government of the 10 kings of Revelation 17. Verse 3 in Daniel 11 introduces Alexander the Great, and verse 2 represents the history that precedes the one-world government in the last days. In verse 1, Gabriel simply identifies that he had strengthened Darius at the beginning of the kingdom of the Medes and Persians, but Gabriel had come to Daniel in chapter 10, when Cyrus the Persian, not Darius the Mede, was then ruling. After clearly tying the kingdom together as a prophetic twofold kingdom of the Medes and Persians, as is France and the United States, Gabriel then introduces the history that precedes the worldwide kingdom of Alexander the Great. And now will I show thee the truth. Behold, there shall stand up yet three kings in Persia, and the fourth shall be far richer than they all, and by his strength through his riches he shall stir up all against the realm of Grecia. Daniel 11, verse 2. Alpha and Omega always illustrates the end of a thing with the beginning of a thing, and verse 2 speaks to the history that precedes the enforcement of the one world government, as represented by Alexander the Great's Kingdom of Greece. Verse 2 is a line of prophecy concerning the United States, which, as the two-horned power of the last days, as typified by the twofold power of the Medes and Persians, and by France. The verse identifies kings that would typify presidents of the United States in the last days, who would stand up in advance of the threefold one-world government of the dragon, the beast, and false prophet. Clovis paralleled Reagan as the first president in the beginning of the history that leads to placing Antichrist back on the throne. From the time of Cyrus, in Daniel 11, there would be three presidents, followed by a fourth, who was far richer than they all were. Darius was the first king of the Medo-Persian Empire, and Cyrus, who was ruling when Daniel received the history from Gabriel, was the second king. Four kings would follow Cyrus, so the fourth of the following kings would be the sixth king. The sixth king would be the richest king, and the rich president king would stir up all against the realm of Greece. The presidents since Reagan were Bush the first, Clinton, Bush the second, Obama, so the sixth and richest king would be Trump. That king president would stir up the realm of Greece, globalists. The definition of the Hebrew phrase stir up is quite informative. The Hebrew word translated as stir up in the verse is a primitive root meaning to awaken or wake up. In the history typified by the fourth ruler after Cyrus, a president far richer than any other president would be raised up, and through his strength and power, an awakening would be brought about against Greece. Greece, being a symbol of globalism, progressivism, and wokeism, would be brought into the spotlight of the history of the sixth richest president. He would awaken the entire realm of planet Earth to the controversy of progressive wokeism and global domination. The awakening to the movement of progressive wokeism that is brought about in the presidency of the richest president occurs with the Republican horn at the very time that the awakening of the ten virgins occurs in the Protestant horn. We will continue our study of Daniel 11 verse 40 in the next article. Notwithstanding the widespread declension of faith and piety, there are true followers of Christ in these churches. Before the final visitation of God's judgments upon the earth, there will be among the people of the Lord such a revival of primitive godliness as has not been witnessed since apostolic times. The Spirit and power of God will be poured out upon His children. At that time, many will separate themselves from those churches in which the love of this world has supplanted love for God and His Word. Many, both of ministers and people, will gladly accept those great truths which God has caused to be proclaimed at this time to prepare a people for the Lord's second coming. The enemy of souls desires to hinder this work, and before the time for such a movement shall come, he will endeavor to prevent it by introducing a counterfeit. In those churches which he can bring under his deceptive power, he will make it appear that God's special blessing is poured out. There will be manifest what is thought to be great religious interest. Multitudes will exult that God is working marvelously for them, when the work is that of another spirit. Under a religious guise, Satan will seek to extend his influence over the Christian world. The Great Controversy, 464.